I'm going to summarize what we've been talking about so far on craving, which is the eighth link in dependent origination. And it's the stage of the cycle of dependent origination that we're studying on Monday nights with our co-guiding teachers also. I'm going to start with a story, because for the Sunday morning sit, we always start with a poem or a story. And the first story is going to be about this object. So this is, it's going to introduce my story. So this is a teacup, and it has a story, and it is a keepsake in my family. It was made by my great grandmother, and then my grandmother gave it to me. It's very fragile. It has an engraving on the bottom. It says it's Haviland China, made in France, and then handwritten, it says Leland Jr. from Nana, March 24th, 1936. And that was given to my father by my great-grandmother. So this is very fragile and has a preciousness about it. And I keep it up in the top shelf of a cupboard, and I hardly ever take it out, and I never use it. And now I'm going to read you the story. And the story is called The Death of a Teacup. It comes from the book called Wisdom of the Crows and Other Buddhist Tales. There once was a great teacher of Zen, a school of the Buddhist teaching that is very down to earth about how the things in life really are. This great teacher's name was Ikuyu, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Even as a young boy, he was very clever and always found a way of getting himself out of trouble. One day, as he was playing, Ikuyu knocked over a teacup, which fell to the floor and shattered into pieces. Now, the teacup belonged to his teacher, and it was very old and precious, and his teacher valued it greatly. As Ikuyu was worrying about this accident, he heard his teacher coming and quickly hid the pieces of the cup behind his back. When his teacher appeared, Ikuyu asked him, "Why do people die?" "That's just natural," his teacher replied. "Everything only has so long to live, and then it must die." At these words, Ikuyu showed his teacher the pieces of the broken teacup. That's the end of the story. My interpretation is that we need to remember, as we search for happiness, that everything we want has only so long to live or to stay in its desired condition. Things fall apart and die. As the fourth recollection reminds us, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There's no way to escape being separated from them. I've read this story many times, and I just thought it was kind of it didn't have a lot of a suspense. It didn't seem to have a lot of plot, and, you know, what's that all about? But now, after studying craving, I suddenly thought, oh, this is the perfect story for me this Sunday. And then I remembered this cup in my cupboard, you know, which is precious. And because of that, has, you know, some drawbacks to it. I can't use it because I'm afraid it'll break. And it will break. And it reminds me of the things that we think are so important that we, can obsess about them. And for example, if somebody used that cup and broke it, like my daughter, she decided to just take it out and use it and put too much hot water in it or something, I'd be very upset. And so it kind of holds the combination of the perfection and beauty and that we value, I value history of my family, because there's some I-ness in that. You know, my great grandmother, I'm pretty proud of her that she could paint that cup. And so there's kind of an identity with it. And so it kind of brings up a lot of the issues around craving. It also made me think of the fires right now that are going on in California and people who are losing their homes, everything in their homes. I saw a picture of a woman digging through just rubble, and she was picking up a vase, and it was a glass vase, one thing that had survived that destruction. And it makes me pause and contemplate all the things in my life. And I think I'm not so attached to them. And I'll think to myself, oh, I don't like, you know, I don't like to go shopping, and I like simplicity, and I like to get rid of things. I say that to myself, but, you know, do I want my house burned down? How would I feel? What would that make me face if I had to face that? And then yesterday, my daughter spilled hot coffee on her computer. And I know right now that a lot of us have a lot attached to our computers. And I thought that right now is what a symbol of craving. My daughter takes really good care of her computer, more so than I do. So I felt really bad when she had to face that problem, that issue with her computer. And she doesn't have it right now. So now she has to get it, you know, it's being diagnosed, and she has to live without it. And it's interesting. I think computers these days are probably way more an item to contemplate with respect to craving than my teacup. Anyway, those are just some thoughts, reflections I had on the story. And now I'm going to go forward to what I'm going to do this morning. I'm going to review some of the main ideas we've learned about this month about craving, and then talk about some reflections and investigations these ideas have stimulated in me. And then finally, I'll offer some practice suggestions around craving that you might carry forward into the coming months. We've learned to review that craving is the eighth link in the cycle of dependent origination, and it's closely linked to the seventh link in the cycle, feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. I think Tiwari said that feeling tones were like glue, and they glue together our experiences, and we get glued to things through feeling tone. The feeling tone of a sensory contact is dependent on past conditioning, and we don't in the present moment control whether that contact will be pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant to us. And while one thing might be pleasant to me, it might be unpleasant to you. We do, however, at this point with craving, have the opportunity to choose how we will relate to that pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral contact. It's not easy to choose, but we do have the option to do that. And we've talked a lot about that choice, exploring that choice this month. Here we can interrupt the direction and momentum of our movement in the cycle of dependent origination towards from craving to clinging to becoming to birth, aging, and death. So it's very important for us to pay attention to craving. After all, craving is the cause of dukkha, the Buddha says. It's the second noble truth. And craving has power. It must be abandoned because if it's left to its own devices, it can develop into clinging. I want, everybody has that, I want. Then there's I need. Then there's I want even if I don't need, and I must have. We've talked about how craving is on a continuum and that it includes both wanting something and the flip side, not wanting something or aversion. Sometimes, you know, since it's a natural thing to want, I mean, all human beings want. Obviously, we're going to be wanting. And Philip Moffat says, not all desire contracts into craving, and it's craving that is the cause of suffering. We can have wholesome desires for wholesome objects and wholesome experiences, and we can have aspirations like the aspiration of the Bodhisattva to help alleviate the suffering of the world. The Buddha didn't choose the path of asceticism. He said that was not the way. He chose the middle way. We need to keep this in mind when looking at craving. Tewari quoted the Buddhist monk, let's see, how do you pronounce this? I don't know if it's Anilayo. Is that what it is, Suze? Anilayo, yeah. Who describes how to cultivate non-attachment. And he says non-attachment is a balanced relationship to whatever is happening. A balanced relationship. But the Buddha said we really do need to watch craving and we need to keep craving in check. We need to be aware not only of the object of our attachment, but of the wanting experience itself. The Buddha said, whatever gratification there is in this world, I have found. He also said, bhikkhus, I set out seeking the drawbacks in the world. We need to do this too. We need to look at what gratifies us in the world and what the drawbacks are. Seuss asked us to ask ourselves, what makes us happy? Like the Buddha who searched for what is gratifying to us in the world, we can investigate our happiness too. What makes us happy? And we can ask, are there any drawbacks? Knowing that there are three kinds of craving can help our investigations. Craving for sensuality, craving for becoming, and craving for non-becoming. There are also six classes of craving. Craving for forms, for sounds, for odors, for flavors, for tangibles, and for mind objects. So we can crave ideas and have very strong opinions, as well as want a flashy new car. The suttas are full of images of craving. First, the word itself, tanha in Pali, means unquenchable thirst. There's also the image of craving being like the root of a tree and you can chop it down to the ground, but if the root is still alive, it will grow back. And I'm thinking about the, in my garden, I have a butterfly bush and I asked my neighbor to chop it to the ground and he did, but we didn't take the roots out. And of course there's all these little branches starting up again. It's also craving was compared to a creeping vine that sets its tendrils out and just is very persistent. It was compared to a stream that you step into, and it's fine when you start and step into it, but the stream has a power to it, and pretty soon you're in the rapids, and then the next thing you know, you're in a whirlpool. So there's a image of craving as something that is very powerful, that pushes us, that continues growing unseen below the surface if we're not alert. And it's also considered a net. The net of craving is a common metaphor, or not metaphor, symbol of the way craving operates in our lives. Tuari asked us to look, where does craving begin? What causes craving? At any moment, we have many contacts occurring, and we know each contact is somewhere on the pleasant, unpleasant continuum. We've developed many habits, habitual reactions to these contacts already, but we can start, especially during our meditation, to cultivate greater awareness of the link between feeling tone and our reactions of desire or aversion, like Lindell suggested we do this morning. And in meditation, sometimes you can just see a slight leaning. You know, there's just a slight leaning away. You can see the more subtle movements of our likes and dislikes, our preferences, and sometimes follow them. Like I've spent time before lunch watching my hunger develop when I've been meditating. I remember one of the reading a, or actually listening to a talk by one of the monks who in England, who talked about planting a vine, and he kept training it to the left. He wanted it to grow, let's say, to the left, but it would not grow to the left. It had to grow to the right. It just kept going back. He would take it and, you know, try to tie it up going to the left, and the next thing you knew, it was going to the right again because it was going towards the sun. So that's just an example of the insistence of craving. And we can see that in our lives, I'm sure, with different objects. What are the drawbacks? Let's see. Yeah. Let's see. I just want to see who started. Yeah. So whatever seems endearing and agreeable in terms of the world, that is where this craving, when arising, arising, and that is where, when dwelling, it dwells. So it's, if you want to study craving, you can just go to the pleasant and you will get a good start, and you can go from there, or the unpleasant. So what are the drawbacks? The Buddha looked at the drawbacks as well as the gratifications in the world. So something that it's important for us to do that too. And both I know Tuari and Lindell emphasized the suffering part of craving. Tuari said suffering will show the way to wisdom. And Lindell reminded us to pay attention to the ouch of wanting. Craving is the root cause of suffering and the second noble truth. And in order to find out our way to the end of suffering, we have to be with the suffering and penetrate it. One of the things that causes the suffering is the unquenchability of wanting. Lindell read a poem, "The Mind Always Wants More." And reflecting on that wanting more is a really helpful way to see craving. Our craving, the dependent origination starts with the first link of ignorance. And if we can see why we suffer with craving, because ignorance of the way things really are, that all phenomena is characterized by these three things, unsatisfactoriness. I mean, it's right there. Anicca, impermanence, it's there again. And anatta, no self. So we're trying to satisfy ourself and make ourself happy, but there is no self. So we're kind of in a bind. We're going to be disappointed when we have, for example, some of the examples of suffering. We are going to be disappointed when we get a new thing or a relationship or an accomplishment that we're so sure would be the thing that if only we had it, it would make us happy. And then it loses its luster and we have to start looking for the next best thing. Once we have what we want, we might have fears of losing it. And this fear becomes a point of suffering. So an example is my teacup. You know, I don't want to break it, so I never use it. It's just been up in the cupboard forever. We might find ourselves with an argument for life. I want this to be otherwise. This isn't fair. Why me? These are just a few of the examples of the drawbacks in the world. All beings want to be happy, and there are the three characteristics, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, anicca, impermanence, and anatta, not self. So what do we do? Well, when I was thinking about it this week or this month, what came to me was a phrase from a favorite poem of mine, and the phrase was, "It matters that we care." And I thought, well, why did that come to me? But I knew it felt really true to me because wanting has to do with caring. But at the same time, it does matter that we care. I re-listened to Susa's talk, and she quoted a teacher who said, to take the path away from craving and break the link in the cycle of dependent origination, we need to do these things. We care without demanding, we love without conditions, and we move forward toward our goals without attaching to outcomes. So we do continue to care, we do continue to love, and we do continue to move forward. Just a minute. So those things, to care without demanding, love without conditions, and move forward toward our goals without attaching to outcomes, to me seems like an example of the middle way. It's a balanced relationship to experience that Analayo was talking about. And it's not easy because we do want to demand that things be the way we want them to be. It is hard to let go of them not quite working the way we want. It requires using both the wings of the Dharma, compassion and wisdom. It requires feeling the wanting to hold on with the ouch of letting go. And I'm coming to think that this experiencing needs to maybe even happen simultaneously. So it made me think of another poem, and it's by Mary Oliver. And Mary Oliver is a very popular poet, so some of you may have heard this poem before. But it's called, I'm going to read it, In Blackwater Woods. Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I have ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires and the black rivers of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. So this brings me to some suggestions for practice. Some of the things that we need to hold some of the things I think we need to hold with the feeling of letting go comes from the Buddha's suggestion to practice with loss through the five recollections. So it is suggested that as a daily practice, we read or recite the five recollections. And these are recollections on loss, described in the Upajatana Sutta. I am of the nature to age. Aging is unavoidable. I am of the nature to get ill. Illness is unavoidable. I am of the nature to die. Death is unavoidable. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And the last one, my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot avoid the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. And I remember when I read those the first time, I thought, well, I don't want to read those every day. That is such a downer. But since I've been studying clinging, I just more and more see how that is really important to hold at the same time this wonderful teacup and hold how beautiful it is in its perfection and how fragile it is and how it is going to break at some point, and to try to hold that together. For one thing, it keeps me in touch with the three characteristics. So I'm not thinking this is going to bring me happiness forever. There is kind of a poignancy about it, but it's not getting rid of the caring. I still really care for that cup. It really is beautiful. It's not going to keep me from enjoying looking at it and maybe appreciating my great grandmother, who I never knew, but the fact that, you know, what it took to make that. Caring is important, but I have to be able to let it go too. And I have to remember that I will have to let it go. So I'm suggesting as a practice to try, you know, working with the five recollections or working with one of them, just to consider that as a practice. Lindell quoted a story from The Hidden Lamp, which is a great book, Stories from 25 Centuries of Awakened Women. The story was Vasumitra teaches freedom from passion, and it came from 2nd century India. She quoted the Vimalakirti Sutta, which says, without going into the ocean of passions, it is impossible to attain the mind of omniscience. When I read that again, I read the commentary by a modern teacher who was analyzing that story. And when she reflected on it, she suggested this practice for helping us become free from passion. She said, this will help us wake up to the fact that we are not separate. There is no yearning for another because there is no other. And this was the practice. She said to meditate in the midst of craving. Focus on the yearning, she said, not rejecting or rising above it, and especially not acting it out. This transformational practice is to focus on the yearning while letting go of the object of desire. I haven't really meditated on that, but I've worked on it. And the place I've worked on it is in my garden, because I have a problem with wanting my garden to be perfect and really being obsessed with like on the roses, the yellow leaves that seem to be more yellow leaves every day. And so I'm always picking out the yellow leaves, even when I'm in the midst of Qigong. And so I try to let go of taking those yellow leaves off. And I really want that rose bush to look beautiful and perfect. And it's really hard for me. I mean, this is a pretty simple practice, but it's really hard for me not to get rid of those yellow leaves that are getting in the way of the perfection of my rose. And the third practice that I'm going to suggest comes from Tweri. When I told Tweri about my passion for to-do lists that I never finished, and it caused me a lot of suffering because I have to-do lists in my house and I have to-do lists in my garden, and I just spend all the time trying to get there to make it just right, and I never get there, so then I don't enjoy it, I don't sit and relax, and there's a tension, agitation. And she said I should look at the assumption underneath my attachment, and she thought it was one of the four distortions. And so I went and read the four distortions again, and these are the four distortions. So I'm suggesting that you might want to look at the four distortions if you're really obsessive about something and just can't seem to let go of it, that sometimes we have a false assumption and we're distorting. It's based on our belief. So these are the four distortions. Sensing no change in the changing, sensing pleasure in suffering, sensing the unlovely as lovely, and assuming self where there's no self. So what jumped out at me was sensing the unlovely as lovely. And what I thought was, like with my garden and that perfect rose, and I didn't like the yellow leaves, is that was thinking that it was really lovely to have a perfect rose that never changed. But it's a growing plant and it's part of a cycle. So that means it's not alive. So I was saying that what was lovely was really death. I mean, it was something that was not alive. So in order to really appreciate that rose, I needed to see it in its whole cycle and open to the loveliness of the life cycle and all the cycles of the weather and the cycles of my garden. And so anyway, I thought that helped me loosen up towards that particular object of my craving. And I don't like my garden so much in August because it gets very dried out and less perfect. So I'm trying to open up to the wholeness. So those are three possibilities for practice. Next week, Tweri will talk about the transition from craving to clinging, a very slippery slope. But I'm going to leave you with some words of hope from a venerable teacher from India, Sri Nisargadatta. He says, "The real world is beyond our thoughts and ideas. We see it through the net of our desires. Divided into pleasure and pain, right and wrong, inner and outer. To see the universe as it is, you must step beyond the net. It's not hard to do because the net is full of holes." So thank you for your patience and listening. We're going to have a breakout rooms now. And the discussion question is that Buddha said it was hard to let go of craving for him before he became a Buddha. And that was before he saw the suffering in the craving. Once he saw the suffering, he was more able to let go. So I thought perhaps you could pick a craving you have and explore the drawback, the danger, the suffering in it.